Thank you for listening to this teaching from Forerunner Fellowship. For more teachings or to subscribe to our podcast as well as information about our congregation, visit our website at forerunnerfellowship.org.
Well, this morning, the greatest commandment. This is session 4, which I've entitled, This is What He's Like. The greatest commandment. This is what He's like. This is how He thinks, how He feels, what He is like at His core. His love is for us. In this series, we're touching on the commandment that He's given, both Old Testament and New Testament, that is identified as the primary thing that He wants from us, and that is for us to love Him with all our heart, soul, mind, and strength. And when I think about the nature of God, and really maybe unwittingly, when we talk about the greatest commandment, maybe unknowingly, we are talking about the nature of God. We're talking about what He's like at His core. If you get Him alone, you're playing, you know, a game of chess with Him, and you get to ask Him, what is most important to you? What do you care most about? What is the thing that's on your heart the most? And His answer is, I love you and I want you to love me. That communicates great depths about who He is and what He's like. What I want us to talk about this morning is the revelation that empowers us to be able to love Him back. So if the commandment is love God with all our hearts, mind, and strength, I want to talk about the revelation that empowers us to be able to pull that off. This morning, I want to talk about understanding the nuances or the storyline that helps us to be able to actually fulfill God's greatest desire for us. And that is, it actually starts with His love for us, not our love for Him. Let me say that one more time. What empowers us to be able to love God, what gives us the inner power, the strength in our inner man, to be able to love Him, and remember, loving Him is the greatest commandment to mankind. What gives us the power to be able to do that is His love for us and us understanding that love first. You know the verse, we love Him because He first loved us. Well, I want us to understand this love this morning. And I hope that this whole series, if we'll walk in every Sunday morning in this series and we'll go, God, lead me, empower me to be able to love You, to get You what You want. Use this morning's message, use the worship time, use the fellowship, use this morning to empower me to get You what You want. Greatest love, the greatest commandment. Help me. Then we'll be looking in the message, in the Bible verses, we'll be looking in the worship times, we'll be looking for those little phrases that are gonna help empower our love, that are gonna give us fuel, that are gonna give us grace and strength to be able to give Him what He wants the most for us to love Him with all our hearts, soul, mind, and strength. So this morning, as we talk about this revelation, God loves us, I want us to understand it as the foundation of Christianity. The foundation of Christianity is that God has great affection for us. So He's not asking us to give Him anything that He's not already given us. And it's actually a supernatural exchange, because I don't know about you, I have never physically seen or touched God with my hands. So this whole interaction, this whole relationship that we have with Him is a supernatural relationship. Because you don't actually get to physically be with, you know, 5'8" Jesus in a room. I always imagined Him as my height. I don't know. You can imagine Him as yours, whatever. You don't get to have an interaction with Jesus in the flesh. So the whole exchange is on a supernatural plane. You ever think about that? The whole existence of being a Christian and having a spirit man, and that while we are spirit, our spirits connect with God who is spirit. The whole interaction, the whole exchange, the whole relationship, it's supernatural. And that thought process is the foundation of Christianity, is that God wants to have a supernatural exchange of His love to us and our love to Him. He wants to empower us through His love so that we can be able to love Him back. I'm going to give you a few verses for us to kind of think about and get our thoughts started down this road. John 16:27. The Father Himself loves you because you have loved Me and have believed that I came from God. Oh, if you love Jesus, the Father himself loves you. If you love Jesus, if you believe that Jesus came from God and you've given your life to him, the Father loves you. Now, I want to tell you, on your worst day, this truth is still true. In your hardest moment, the Father himself loves you. That is a powerful reality. To have that revelation, the Father loves me. Let's keep going. Romans 5:8. God demonstrated his own love for us in this. While we were still sinners, Christ died for us. He demonstrated his love for us. He demonstrated his love for us. He took great pains. He went to great lengths in order to be able to demonstrate, to show it. You know, I don't often claim this, but I was actually born in Missouri. And it's the show me state. And so whenever you're talking about a big situation, people are like, man, I really love you. I'm always like, show me. Because the whole thing about love is it's far more communicated in a demonstration, in action, in expression than it is in mere words. The words are helpful, but words without that action that follow up, it's meaningless. It doesn't have any impact. God demonstrated his love for us. Not just that he has love, he demonstrated that love for us. 1 John 4:9. This is how God showed his love among us. He sent his one and only son into the world that we might live through him. It's how he showed his love among us. I just want us to be catching these verses. This is foundation. This is where Christianity starts. It doesn't start with you coming to him. It started with him coming to you. That's where it started. And the way that he came to you was he demonstrated his love for you by giving his son, because he so wanted you, he was willing to give up his son to get you. I mean, we got to understand, this is the foundation of Christianity. So when God says, the greatest commandment is for you to love me, that ought to be like a given and ought to be easy because of how far he's gone out of his way to love us, to demonstrate his love for us. The Father himself loves you. You are loved by the Father. This is the starting point of the relationship of Christianity, of life. The Father loves you. Put up that verse in Psalm 25. This is another powerful component of his love, just having this revelation. All of his ways are loving and faithful. I want you to think about that in those moments where you're most challenged, where things are most going the wrong way. Look at this verse. He guides the humble in what is right, and he teaches them his way. All the ways of the Lord are loving and faithful. All the ways that he does, all the things that he does, all of his purposes, all the stuff that he's doing, the foundation of that stuff is love. It's love stuff. The foundation of what God is doing in your life, the very purpose of it, all of his ways, they're loving, they're faithful. Faithful to his purposes for you, faithful to your good. But I want you to check this. All of God's ways, all of them are loving. All of them. The way that he is. This is what he's like. When he does stuff, it's loving. When he doesn't do stuff, it's loving. When he does stuff to you, it's loving. Through you, in you, next to you, not for you, for your friend and not you. It's loving. It's loving. This is who he is. This is what he's like. Oh, but I love it's not just his activity. It's not just the ways of the Lord are loving. Look at this. Let's get up those next couple of verses. 1 John 4:7-8, and then 2 Corinthians 13 says it similarly. Dear friends, let us love one another, for love comes from God. So check this. When you love, if it's truly love, and we all know you can act loving but have an ill motive and it's not love. We've all been there before this morning. So We've all been there. We know what that's like. But when you're operating in love, that wasn't from you. It's not because you're cool, because you're not that cool. The way you got the goods to be able to love is you got it from him. Love comes from God, but it's more than it comes from God. Keep going. Whoever does not love does not know God, because God is love. It's more than his actions are loving. It's more than he's the source for how you can love. He himself is love. Without God, there is no love in the world. Without God, there is no concept of love, because the concept is a person and the person is God. God is love. This is who he is. It just kind of starts to make sense that when you ask him, hey, what do you think's most important? What's the greatest commandment? It kind of makes sense his answer would be that we would love him back. I mean, it kind of makes sense if this is who you are, if this is what you're like, if this is how you act, if all of your ways are loving, if you by nature are love, then if we have a conversation with you and we get to brass tacks, I mean, we get down to it, what is the single most important thing? How could he say anything except love? How could he? I mean, he wouldn't even be true to himself. What's most important? Well, I really like sacrificial animals. It's like, man, that is not what God is mostly about. What does God want? He wants love. He is love, and he wants more of it, and he put it in you to be able to give back to him. He gave you his love so that you could love him. The way we love God is we grow in the revelation that he loves us. We grow in the revelation that he is love. We grow in the revelation that his ways are loving. He is loving. This is what he's like. The way we accomplish the greatest commandment is we grow in the revelation of how he has already done the greatest commandment to us. How he has already loved us with all of his heart, soul, mind, and strength, which then gives us supernatural capacities to be able to give it back to him. This is awesome. You don't need to look outside of God to be able to find what to give God. You don't need to be able to dig deep within yourself. It's not, you need to find it somewhere out in the world. You go to him and you go, you love me. Help me to be able to love you like you love me. Lord, I feel so weak. I don't have the ability to love you like I want to. Give me more ability so you can get what you want. Help me to give you what you desire most. Empower me. I'm telling you guys, this can be our life. The foundation of our life can be a pursuit, and should be, of an increased revelation of the way that he feels about us, so that we can then grow in a capacity to be able to love him back. And as we go on this journey, it's like really fun. It's enjoyable. It's not a burden. This is like a really good way to live. It's exciting. It's invigorating. You get to touch love. Who doesn't like love? I love love. It's so great to have love flowing, coursing through us. To have the dialogue of our conversation with Jesus about the love of the Father for us and about our love for him. About our interactions with one another, expressing love, because love comes from God. So actually, when we love one another, we get to feel a little bit of God just press through us. We get to feel a little bit of him come through us and touch somebody else. That's why it's fun. That's why it's delightful. That's why all the grumpy face thing, don't y'all come next week and grumpy face me during the middle of this message. I don't care what that girl says, okay? All that grumpy face stuff, it's why it feels the opposite. It's why it feels tension and unfun and unlove. It's why it's depressing and sad and self-focused. All that grumpy, it's like, Lord, give me grace to love, to abound in love, to have so much love, because God is love and love comes from him. So as we love each other, we're actually flowing in the very essence of God. Do you get that? This is beautiful. Encourage one another, be of one mind, live in peace, and the God of love and peace will be with you. The God of love and peace will be with you. Check it out. How do we get the God of love and peace? Encourage one another, be in one mind, live in peace, and then when we do that, the God of love and peace will be with us. We'll get to flow more with the God of love and peace. But you can't, just as a real practical point, we can't be asking the Lord for an increase of love and peace and then be living in a lifestyle, having words that are in opposition, having actions that are going the different direction. You can't be like, God, I want to feel your love and peace, and then constantly be like unloving and unpeaceful. Like that won't work. Like you're working in conflict against the very thing that you're asking. We want to grow in love. It's incomparable. His love, again, this morning, the objective. I want to help us understand the revelation of how we grow in the greatest commandment. It is a growing understanding of how he loves us, of who he is, of how his love operates, pointed at us, how his love is aimed at us, directed at us, and the greater measure of revelation that we have of that reality, the greater capacity that we have to be able to love him back. So I just want to talk about his incomparable love. I want to talk about it as kind of multifold here. Abounding, abounding. Put up that Exodus 34:6. This is so awesome. When you think about the context of what's happening in this verse, this is Moses. He's just led the Israelites out of Egypt. Okay. You know, this is actually the commissioning. So Moses is about to lead the Israelites. No, we already passed that. Yes, sorry. He's already led them out of Egypt. And he's standing on the side of the mountain. And he's having an encounter with the Lord. And in this moment, Moses is really looking for God's leadership in his life. He's trying to figure out, how do I continue to lead these people? What are your purposes? What do you want to do? What's your objective? I just led them out of Egypt. Now we're in the desert. Now what, God? Check out how God addresses that situation in his leader, Moses. He passed in front of Moses, proclaiming something. This is the direction. This is what you do. I've got 10 commandments coming for you. This is the plan. No. You know what he does? He walks by and goes, I'm loving. That's it? That's what you got to say? That's the answer? I'm loving. Yeah, that's it. That's it. Look at this. He walks in front of Moses, proclaiming, the Lord. The Lord, the compassionate and gracious God, slow to anger, abounding in love and faithfulness. Let me tell you how you're going to make it, Moses. Let me tell you how you're going to make it, New Testament believer. The Lord is gracious. He's abounding in love and faithfulness. This is who he is, and this is the answer today, just like it was the answer then. The revelation, why would God tell Moses this? Because Moses didn't know. Oh, maybe Moses had heard it, but he hadn't heard it. His spirit had not heard it. Israel had not yet heard it. They had just watched the exploits of all the plagues of Egypt, of all the deliverance, but they did not understand the character and nature of God was not primarily a judger who delivers people out of, you know, bondage. His primary revelation was he was abounding in love. And oh yeah, those exploits were just some of his abounding, some of the way that he abounds in his love, some of the way that he shows his love on behalf of those who are his people. He is abounding in love. If we can get that revelation, this marvelous truth, if we can understand him to be abounding in love, I just think about the finance thing. If you've got a friend that's abounding in money, it's hard to not have conversations about that from time to time. It's hard to not be benefited by that from time to time. If someone is abounding in love and we get to know them as the one who is boundless in love, abounding, then we get impacted by it. We get to talk to him about it. We get to relate to him that way. Abounding in love. I like Nehemiah's observation. So if you guys know the story of Nehemiah, it's fine if you don't. God commissioned Nehemiah to go build a wall so that the temple that they had just rebuilt in Jerusalem didn't get destroyed again by bad guys. Because if you don't have a wall, bad guys can get you. So Nehemiah was commissioned, hey, go build the bad guy defense system, okay? And build a wall around the temple so that the temple can't be invaded by bad guys. Nehemiah, ready, go. So Nehemiah's job is to build the wall. But it wasn't a wall for wall's sake. It was a wall to protect the temple so that God could be worshiped night and day. That was actually what this was all about. Nehemiah had some interesting observations. Nehemiah's form of leadership, I just like this because Nehemiah got it. Nehemiah was leading the people. Consistently, we see in the book of Nehemiah, him leading again and again out of the revelation that God really, really, really loves the people. Watch this. Nehemiah 9:17. You are a forgiving God, gracious and compassionate, slow to anger and abounding in love. He got it. He quoted the leader verse that God gave Moses. He quoted it. He understood. Nehemiah was then operating in the revelation. This is really who God is. This is what he's like. He's abounding in love. That's what he's like. Well, but the bad guys are going to get us. He's abounding in love. Do you understand? Yeah, but my life is, he's abounding in love. This is who he is. It's what he's like. But just a little bit later in Nehemiah, it says, he was loved by his God and God made him king over Israel. It's talking about David. He's talking about David. And instead of saying David was mostly a gift to Israel, he instead focuses mostly on God being a gift to David, on God's love, on how much God loved David. So that's why he did what he did in his life. Nehemiah was instructing the people, keep building the wall, keep doing the assignment. But he was doing it out of the revelation that God's love was the primary thing. He continues to exhort the people. Look at the beginning of Nehemiah 1, verse 5. If we can get that one up there. Nehemiah 1, 5. Then I said, Lord, the God of heaven, the great and awesome God who keeps his covenant of love with those who love him and keep his commandments. He keeps the covenant of love. Do we mostly think about our relationship with God as a covenant of love? Or do we mostly think about it as a dutiful thing? This is what Christians do. You know, I go to church. I try to follow Jesus. It's a covenant of love, a love covenant. Loving it. We're living and loving it, and I'm loving it. The Lord has a covenant of love with you, and he keeps it. This is primarily who he is. This is primarily what you found yourself in your relationship with God. You found yourself in a love covenant, and God plans to keep it. He keeps the covenant of love. Nehemiah 13, 22, look at this. Remember me for this also, my God, and show mercy to me according to your great love. Show mercy to me according to your great love. Not show mercy to me because of how awesome I am. Not show mercy to me because of the acts or the things, the exploits that I've done, the things that I've done for Jesus. Show mercy to me because you're great like that. Show me your great love. Show mercy to me according to how much you love me. Think about how unmerited this whole conversation is. It's not, I'm going to give you something, you give me something. I'm going to take something from you and expect you'll give me more because you're like this. Show mercy to me according to your great love. It's what you're like. It's who you are. Can you start to see how easy this person is to like? Who doesn't want to like this guy? Who has a hard time with this person? His primary MO in everything always is love. This is who he is. This is what he's like. So then when he says, so can I tell you what I want from you? My greatest commandment is that you'd live in the revelation that I'm abounding in love and that I love you a lot. I want you to live in that revelation. Live in my love. And then from that, give it back to me. It'll feel really good. Give it back to me. I'm worthy of it. Give it back to me. It's mine anyway. It's mine. Give me my love. The revelation that God loves us is the power for us to be able to love him. We need to grow in this revelation. We need to grow in the knowledge of the love of God for us, of who he is. Not the arbitrary, not just the covenantal, like he had to do it. It was duty. He had to love me because that's what he's like. He's God, so he was forced into it. He delights in loving us. We'll read that verse in a minute. I want to keep going. Psalm 18, verse 19. Oh, there it is. It's right here. Psalm 18, verse 19. Look at this. He brought me out into a spacious place. He rescued me because he delighted in me. This was David in a moment of compromise, by the way. And David goes, God showed up on my behalf because he delighted in me. He delighted in me. I want you to think of like the prettiest flower that there's ever been in the history of flowers. And then I want you to imagine a five-year-old girl finding it. Five-year-old girl finds prettiest flower ever. And she holds it and looks at it like Schmeagol and the Precious. And she's looking at it. She's like, oh, it's so great. Look at this. Delight. Just like you can't. Hey, hey. She's not even hearing you. She's enthralled with the pretty flower. look at this thing. Delighted in this thing. Delighted in the discovery. So colorful, so beautiful. Smells delicious. I think I snorted some. The delight. I want you to understand that picture. He's holding you and you're his purdy flower. He delights in you. It's not duty. He doesn't love you because he has to. He loves you because he delights in you. He delights in you. I can't believe this is the deal we get. I have counted on so few occasions where I had this, where I even able to touch delight like this even a little bit, where I was genuinely delighted in a person. It's happened a few times, but I don't live that way all the time. I wish I did. This delight, he's delighted with you all the time. His delight is in you. Again, the verse we just read was David after stupid season. It was David after being in compromise for quite some time. And his response in the situation was, God lifted me up out of that situation because he delights in me. It wasn't even for the sake of leadership, because we needed the leader to be in a good place. He took David out of the situation because he delighted in David. And David understood that. David had a living revelation of the love that God had for David. And so David was supercharged with this revelation. It changed the way he thought, the way he processed. It changed his songs. It's the reason that so many of our songs, our worship songs, are actually influenced or straight up phrases right out of David's songs. It's the reason that's part of the DNA of worship even now in 2020, is because David had a revelation that God delighted in him, unrelated to how cool or uncool he was. He delighted him because he was his party flower. And God delights in you the same way. Oh, no, you don't understand my mess. I'm sure you got a jacked up mess. Doesn't matter. He delights in you just as you are. He delights in you. He loves you. He delights in you. That word delights. I don't know, for me, somehow that word delight, it's like love times three. I don't know. It's like hearing that word delight, like you just imagine the eyes getting big and the face. It's like this over and over. He delights in me. He delights in you. And as you grow to understand that, it powers your heart to be able to love him back. And truth be told, when that revelation is squelched or squandered, or distracted or forgotten, you are unempowered to love him with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, because it was never supposed to be about you being awesome. It was supposed to be about him delighting in you and you just taking it. You receiving his delight in you. And as you receive it, it gives you power and gratitude. I mean, what creates more gratitude than that? Free love that you totally don't deserve. I mean, you deserve the opposite, and instead he gave you mercy and love and gives it to you again and again. He smiles at you again. He delights in you again and again and again as we grow in the revelation. This is what he's like. The greatest commandment is a no duh. It just makes so much sense. Of course you want me to love you back. And the only way for me to do it isn't for me to dig deep. It's for me to receive his love, meditate on it, receive it, and then turn around and go, I'll tell you what, I don't have much to give you, but I'll give you back what you gave me. Can that work? Can I just give you back what you gave me? Because I don't really have much else. I'm sorry about the whole interest thing. I don't know how all that works. This love didn't even grow. You gave me love. All I got is what you gave me. I can give it back to you. He says, I'll take it. Love comes from me. Oh, it's beautiful. Let's give that other one. Psalm 149:3-5 says it again, the delight thing. I just like this delight thing. Make music to him with the timbrel and the harp. For the Lord takes delight in his people. Hey, let's sing him worship songs, because he's already in the meeting waiting for us. Can't wait, delighted in us. Let's go ahead and sing him worship songs because he delights in his people. He delights in us. He crowns the humble with victory. Let his faithful people rejoice. See, this is actually, let his faithful people rejoice. I don't know if you catch this. It's actually the greatest commandment. It's them doing the greatest commandment. He loves us, so let's love him. It's his faithful people, you know, the ones doing the greatest commandment, they're going to rejoice and sing love songs back to him. He loves us. He so delights in us. This is the foundation of Christianity, people. This is where it starts. The delight of God in you, just as you are, and you know your list. Some of y'all's list, trouble. He delights in you. He loves you. This is the starting point. I want to give us just a couple of characteristics, three characteristics of his love. Then we'll wrap up. It's unfailing, it's unshakable, and it's unending. Let's look at those real quick. His love is unfailing, even when you fail. His love for you, even when you did the stupid, he loves you. His love is unfailing. You know what unfailing means? It means can't fail. Well, yeah, but what about if this happens? Can't fail. Yeah, but what if I did double dumb? Can't fail. His love is unfailing. Let's read it. Psalm 13:5. I trust in your unfailing love. I don't trust in the conditional love. I don't trust in the love that requires me to do this. I trust in your unfailing love. I really don't have any other way forward because I'm a mess, sometimes a hot mess. So the only way I'm really going to be able to make it is if I lean on your unfailing love. It's unfailing, people. His love is unfailing. 36:7, if we can pull up that verse. How priceless is your unfailing love? Oh, priceless. That's the right word. What could you use to buy this? Oh, of what dollar amount is this worth? Of what amount of effort or resources or accomplishments? There is nothing that could account for the cost, the priceless nature of unfailing love. Oh, there is rebounding. There is rebooting. There is resetting. Push delete on all of it and tell him today, I love you. I trust in your unfailing love. Empower my heart to love you better. Help me. Help me in the midst of my lethargy, in my weakness, in my sin. Help me to love you because the commandment doesn't go away when you're weak or sinful. The commandment doesn't disappear. When you've made terrible mistakes, you've been off the trail for a while, you've been walking a different direction, the greatest commandment is still the same for your life, whether you're doing it or not. It's the assignment. He wants you to love him. So push delete on your mistakes and trust in his unfailing love and ask him for power to be able to love him back. Psalm 48, verse 9, similarly. Within your temple, O God, we meditate on your unfailing love. Listen, I'll tell you what. You can do a lot worse than spending hours, days, seasons, decades meditating on his love, his unfailing love. You know, we all meditate. It's just called think real hard for a while. That's what meditate is. Think real hard for a while. We all do it about stuff. Movie plot. You know, what's happening in the economy? What's going to go on with the election? I mean, it's like we all meditate on stuff. We could do a lot worse than meditating on his unfailing love for days, hours, weeks, and years. As we meditate on his love, it transforms us. You are what you eat. So it's like if all we're ever feeding our minds on is all the yuck and the pain, and even on all the... It doesn't even have to necessarily be bad. It can just be like not helpful. Just all the neutral stuff. If all you meditate on is neutral stuff, how will you ever take steps forward in the love of God? So it's not even about like the neutral stuff so bad. Just that cannot be the primary of your appetite. You got to meditate on his unfailing love. And as you do, you get transformed. You get fuel to be able to love him back. Meditating on his unfailing love is power for you to do the greatest commandment well. It's power in your soul. All right, it's unfailing. It's also unshakable. So unfailing, in my opinion, is about you trying to mess it up. And no matter how hard you try to mess it up, His love is still unfailing for you. Unshakable, I think, has a whole lot to do with life circumstances and problems. Look at this. Isaiah 54, verse 10. Though the mountains be shaken. And listen, I want to tell you, if you're living in Israel in that hour and the mountains are shaking, your life is a real problem real quick. I mean, if there's an earthquake and the mountains are shaking, you had a little hut on the side of the hill and it's gone, all right? Though the mountains be shaken and the hills removed, yet my unfailing love for you will not be shaken. It will not be shaken despite circumstances. This is so good because I think a lot of times when circumstances get bad, we get super distracted and pretend that God's on vacation. When circumstances are bad, it's like, well, where are you? What are you doing? You taking a nap? He's like, no. My love, it's unfailing and it's unshakable by these current circumstances. My love did not change one bit by your circumstances. And you need to know that and figure out how to navigate those circumstances instead of give up on God. You need to figure out how in those moments to latch hold of who God is. He's love. He can't change because the world went crazy, you had a bad day, or you got fired. His love is unshakable for you despite your circumstances or your reality. Unshakable. We need to know this love that is unshakable so that there's nothing that anybody can do to me. There's nothing that can happen in culture or economy or politics or anything else. There's nothing that can happen around me that can shake the love of God for my life. His love for me is unshakable. And it's good for us to know that and then try to operate like it's true. You know, these Bible truths are great as long as you practice them, as long as you believe them and do them. It really doesn't like do you a lot of good to be like a trivia buff. Like, I know all the Bible answers. How many of them do you live? Well, zero. I'm too busy memorizing. Try living a few of them. Try believing a few of them and taking them to heart. His love is unshakable. Find the next moment in your life. Maybe you're in it now and something's shaking. Your love right now in the midst of this shaking, it's unshakable for me. Your love for me is deep and it is real right now. It's also unending, unfailing, unshakable, unending. It says it this way. 1,000 times in the word, maybe a made up number, but I don't know. I might not be too far off on that one. This one is in the word a lot. Psalm 136 verse 1 is one example of many, many, many. Give thanks to the Lord for he is good. His love endures forever. It's not he endures forever. That's true too. His love is unending. His love goes on forever. This is powerful because the only person that could even make such a promise is an eternal being. Because he's promising, I'm going to love you now. I'm going to love you next Tuesday. I'm going to love you 1,000,000 Tuesdays from now. 1,000,000 Tuesdays, that's a lot of Tuesdays. I'm going to love you then. My love is unending. It is a forever love. Guys, that is security beyond measure. The thought process that God loves and that he will love and he'll express that love, he'll aim that love at you for years and decades and centuries and millennia. It is a love that is unending. It is unshakable. Doesn't matter what happens in your life. It is unfailing despite what mistakes you make. And it is also unending. His love goes on forever. Now, we won't touch on it today because I've got a session that we're going to do on it. But I'll tell you this. This love also includes discipline and consequences. Okay, so let's not think that because God is loving, that means nobody goes to hell. Lots of people go to hell. And you can too. Just don't. Live the greatest commandment instead. Part of life, part of love is discipline. That's part of love. So we'll touch on that in a later session. I just want to make that point clear. But his love endures forever. A trustworthy nature that is countable, that you can count on in every situation and count on it forever moving forward. This is who he is. The way that we Christian, the way that we do this whole Bible thing, following God thing, is we grow in the revelation, he really, really loves me. This is what he's like. He is the most delightful person in all of forever. And he so loves us. And as we grow in that revelation, he gives us power to be able to love him back.
This concludes this teaching from Forerunner Fellowship. For more information about our congregation, visit forerunnerfellowship.org. Thank you.